accession number 22076, reel 6.
Frank Rosier, reel 6. So we've got up to the 25th of August, which is a date you say you won't forget.
Purely and simply, I mean, as I was saying before, that we were pushed on, chasing, fighting skirmishes, sometimes fiercer battles, a tank here, a couple of tanks there. We weren't taking many casualties, but we were taking casualties. But you'd fall into the, about 11 o'clock at night, they were suddenly, I mean, this is personal, they were falling to 11 o'clock at night, and perhaps even later, and you dropped to where you were when the hawk came. You'd sleep, and about 3, 2:30, perhaps even earlier in the morning, a boot in your backside, come on, and moving on. I've never, ever been so tired since or as before. Really was physically drained, mentally tired. And we came at onto this place, Epaines, I suppose a small village, you know, it's a fair-sized village, let's put it that way. Small town, I was going to say, that's a fair way. And we were moving down this rather sunken path, quite a wide path with hedges either side, when we got fired upon. And subsequently we found out it was an SS, the Do or Die Squad. Their tanks were with us, and light tanks were with us, and I forget who they were, 49th something, so they were with us. And more of a recce tanks than rather fighting tanks, and we got fired upon, and immediately the fire, the fierce, really fiercest fire, you know, that you could come under. I was not involved. I was rolled down into the sort of sunken bit out of the way, and the officer came back and said, Rosie, yeah, take the wounded back. I couldn't get out of there quick enough with her, with two or three wounded. And we crawled out of there. And we got back to the first aid post, FAP, first aid post. I was trying to remember all these initials. I remember the initials rather than the than the what they were for, first aid post. And we handed them over there. And the officer commanded, about the only time I met the CO when I was out there, of the battalion, and he said, what's happening up there? So told me to report. I said, rejoin my battalion, sir. So rejoin all the unit. So I went to turn to go back. I was coming back down the same path that we were there. And by then, we'd taken a lot of casualties, which I didn't know about at that time. And suddenly, a yard, 2 yards in front of me, stepped out this beautiful blonde boy. I'll never, ever will forget that chap's face. He was probably the same age as me. By then, I'd had my 19th birthday. August the 4th had come and gone. And he was probably the same age, if not a little bit younger. But he was a very attractive man. For another man to say that, you know, he was blonde. He was a typical tall German boy. He went for his gun. I say gun because I think it was a Smyser or whatever he was carrying. I do know to this day he had it on the wrong shoulder. I went for my Sten, which was slung on this shoulder, and immediately fired. Sten gun bullets make a very mess of anybody. They are small, snub-nosed bullets. And I cut that kid in half. That's why his face will stay with me to the day I die. I sat on the ground and was physically sick, was ill, you know, and cried because of the terrible thing I've had to do. I rejoined the battalion, or the company, still unaware of what had happened to my best part of my platoon. The officer come back, said, take some more wounded back. Fighting was fierce. It really was. Close fighting. The church was well alight, and the lads told me afterwards that they couldn't get near the church for the heat, but these suicide SS boys were still in that church fighting. They were going to fight till they were killed. And the boys couldn't get near this church because of the heat of this building burning. I went back with the wounded and pleased again to get out of it. Got into the camp and the MO come back. He said, hello, are you here again? I said, yes, sir. We're having a few casualties up there. He said, okay. How long have you been out here? I said, since D-Day, sir. He said, haven't you had a rest? I said, apart from a day here and a day there. 2 day special back in the front. I couldn't get into that 1500 weight quick enough.
You must have looked a bit shattered.
I absolutely out of my feet, I was. And 19 year old again, though a man by then, I'm still a boy.
But you'd had all the experience of shooting that.
Shooting that lad,
that's
and everything, and everything that came, and the strain of it all.
He's going to break.
Yeah. So I went back, and I didn't go far back, just to the next sort of medical unit along the line. And actually, I helped cooking the dinners and things like that for 2 days. They bunged me on a bus. We called them buses. They were another transport, and 1500 weight was a sore one. The next one up, two tonners. I think we called them two tonners. And off we moved. I moved back up to the line. Very great deal of leg pulling. About another holiday, you know, and all this sort of thing. And it was then I found out that 13 of my platoon were killed in that first burst of machine gun fire. I did. And among them was Smokey Joe Fletcher, my mate. And that creased me. It did crease me. And from that moment on, I talked before about what sort of character you become when, and even worse, I'd shoot first, hit anybody that disagreed with me, and was a nasty piece of work. It's the only way I can describe myself. It affected me that much. I was unbearable. Back when people kept away from me, I really was nasty. You know, I know I was, and I knew I was nasty at the time. I just didn't want to know anybody. You know, when they come near, you're right. You know, this is the way I spoke to people. We then pushed on. And we reached the banks of the Seine. I can only describe that particular thing as, if you can imagine a river bank, and the Seine is quite wide there, and the first lot of the 43rd Division across the Seine at near Monny's Garden, Vernon, which is quite near Monny's Garden. That's where the British Army first crossed the Seine. But we were further up towards Rouen. And I can only describe for 3-4 miles back was a complete mess of guns, tanks, horses, vans, cars, everything strewn across the road. You picked your way through it, was what the German army had left behind them, and fleeing from us. We got to the banks of the Seine and we paused and seemed to have a couple of days on the bank of the Seine. The weather's fine. Being a West Country regiment, these horses came in very handy, and we had wonderful fun riding up and down the banks of the Seine, having donkey derbies, we called them, on these whacking grey car horses. First time I'd ever sat on a horse in my life. There then was a brigadier was coming down. What's he want? You know, can't they leave us alone? And we got into the parade, battalion, 4 battalion of parade. And the order came, every third man stepped forward. So I thought, well, what are they going to do then? We were in a clue. And he came along, they took that man's name, and they said that they were going to get mentioned in dispatches. From that day on, though my campaign medals, or some people's campaign medals are very dear to me, I throw mine over the wall. You know, it turned me off them. I thought, here was I, back in St Germain, I can't say the other word, was told I was mentioned in dispatches, and I've never had an official. And these chaps, some of them had only come up as replacements the day before. I'd never seen action, got mentioned in dispatches. And that turned me off awards, you know, of that kind, I thought. And that's why I've never inquired, should I get mentioned in dispatches, or, you know, allowed to wear the oak leaves or whatever, or me medals or whatever. I haven't bothered about it. But that annoyed a lot of us. We thought that was insensitive. Called those that landed D-Day forward, you know, for devotion to duty or something like that. But to call every third man out, and some of them only arrived the day before.
It was probably just thoughtless.
Yeah.
Nobody thought it through.
Then the battalion, for some unknown reason, was divided into two. Half of the battalion crossed the Seine in ducks and rubber boats. The other half, which included myself, got on wagons and we went across through Rouen and crossed the Seine that way, quite an easy way. We then turned left up through the forest of Bretagne, I don't know what the name is, a big forest there. Quite some fierce battles. And then laying in the road, and it was on the edge of the road, and suddenly a counter-attack came in. I can only describe it to you as German tin hats running along on two little legs. They were kids, 14 years old. Open fire. Sir, they're kids. Open fire. They're just as capable of killing you as you are of them. And again, another terrible thing about war. We opened fire on those kids. They were Hitler Youth. I mean, Hitler Youth were nasty in the, you know, in the first, but these were only boys. But they were determined.
But they had guns and that.
Determined. Well, they would kill us, as the sergeant said. They'll kill you. We carried on fighting, and we come to Le Havre. And this is where Rosier bows out. We moved up into Le Havre, and again, we put in an attack. And we'd learnt over the months, it seemed years, that when the barrage went in and the typhoons and the planes come in and stuff, the Germans knew we were going to attack. So they pulled out of their positions, back out of their positions. And when the barrage and the tiffies had gone away, they came back. Tiffies, typhoons, came back. Somehow in our battalion, somebody got aware of what they were doing, perhaps not only our battalion, but the order come through, go in under your own barrage. So we went in under our own barrage, and when the Germans come back, we were sitting, hello, we were waiting for them. And we took many, they were surprised to find us. We took, over the time we were in Le Havre, which I didn't see the end of, we took over 10,000 prisoners at the time over there.
What state was the town of Le Havre?
At that time, I hadn't seen it. You know, we were up in the bit above Montpellier or something like that, it's called, I can't remember. And something, we were up round that way. And then the 49th Div was told to take Le Havre. The 1,000 bomber raid came in, and they pulled us back 3,000 yards, roughly 3 miles, to give us the room for the RAF to bomb. And Douglas Hume's brother has protested about this air raid ever since. But we didn't know at that time. We were pleased to see him going in. When we pulled back, because the lines of communication by that time were very, very stretched, and the nearest port virtually was still the Arab Arches, the Mulberry Harbour Arab Arches, food was very few and far between to get a decent meal. And we were living off the land. In fact, we carried in this pocket here, the right-hand leg and the thigh, carried what was called emergency rations. That was the hardest bit of chocolate you could ever eat in your life. And it was airtight sealed, and we were told to eat that if we got short.
So when you say you were living off the land, you were nicking food where you could?
Nicking food where we could. Cattle get killed. It's not so hard as it sounds. And cattle get killed, and B echelon, that's the admin side of the battalion, coming up behind with the cooks and everybody else, would see this freshly killed cow, and they butcher it, and that's what we had. And, if they couldn't find any onions, it didn't taste all that good, actually. But there again, the difficulty in getting food up to you is sometimes we'd gone. Or we were in such a precarious position, they couldn't get food up to us. You know, dangerous for them to get the food up to us. So we went days without food, or just lived off the land, literally days.
What and, things could you find?
I've had turnips out of a field, anything we could find. Berries on the tree. And with West Country boys, you knew what to eat and what not to eat. I mean, you didn't eat deadly nightshade and all that sort of thing, you know. And all the, benefit of being a West Country fisherman, I suppose, but they knew what to eat. And where we could, we cooked it, you know. Made the most horrible stews, but it tasted all right. So anyway, we got to this, pulled out for this 1,000 bomber raid, and we pulled back, and Bert Figler was still with me. And we passed this enormous chicken farm. It was a big chicken ranch on our farm. So I remember saying to Bert, "Where there's chickens, there's egg, mate." So he said, "Yeah." So we went back, and I said, "I never dug in." We dug in that day. And we dug in, and I said to Bert, "Chickens and eggs." He said, "Yeah." It was roughly, I suppose, 3/4 of a mile away from where we were. So we walked back to this chicken farm. Easy to knock over a few chickens with a weapon. Make sure you hit them in the head. You hit them in the body with a bullet, none of them left. But, killed them carefully. And with two Cockney boys then. and I filled up my battle rails with eggs. Whether a Jerry O.P. had spotted us or what, he lobbed in a very small mortar bomb. It could not have been a very big one. And as I say, you don't hear it till it explodes. And it came in exactly between us. At least I think it did. We both hit the deck. And I remember in mid-air saying, bloody eggs. Poof, they went. And I remember laying on the ground. Something hit me there. And I thought, I remember these eggs. I'm more concerned with these eggs being broken. And I put my hand there. And blood. But I've been wounded, mate. I hope they send me home to England. Doesn't feel much, I said. A lot of blood. A lot of blood. Didn't know how seriously I'd been wounded. Went to Bert, and he was laying on his tummy. I turned him over, and the blood he was covered in, I didn't know at that time it was my blood. He was hit across the forehead, but lay knocked out. I tried to pick him up because, again, I didn't know I was losing blood. Couldn't pick him up. I thought, all right, then. That's knocked me a bit. I remember saying in those unkind, it knocked me a bit more silly than I thought I was, but something to that degree. I go back and get help. And I walk back this three quarters of a mile to the where they were dug in. I remember seeing them getting out of their holes and coming running for me. I remember saying, Bert's back there. They went and got Bert back to finish the story with Bert. They didn't even send in the first aid post. They brought him round with water, bandaged his head up, and he never even went back. I was bunged in an ambulance and shoved off. Okay.
Yeah.
Bunged in an ambulance and whatever they called them in them days. By then I was unconscious. And I was unconscious for 10 days.
So you'd been sent right back?
Yeah. And I was been flown home by Dakota. And I said afterwards, first time in my life I've ever flown, I didn't know it. You know, and I landed, and apparently the first time I came awake was in Swindon Airport. And there was this gorgeous WAF nurse bending over me. And you know what they belong to. WAF would have been light blue, navy dark blue, army red, in piping on their shirt collars. So I knew she was a WAF nurse. So she said, "Hello, soldier, you're awake then." I said, "Yeah." She said, "Anything you like?" I said, "Yeah, what are you doing tonight?" So she said, "You're all right, soldier." And that was the first time I came awake, still not aware that the mortar bomb had gone in there under my jaw, come travel through my face and come out through my eye. Mm. It had hit my skull and split my skull.
Yeah.
I had a fractured skull. The wonderful story, if you'd like to hear, about my mother and father. I mean, they were told that I was wounded, and the police, having told them, said, "We give you a half hour to pack some stuff, you obviously want to go to him." They came back, and we lived in Hayes in Middlesex, which was roughly, I suppose, about 15 miles from Paddington Station, quite a way outside of London. And the police car come back, an actual squad car. Mum and Dad sat in the back. I don't know what the neighbours thought. They'd been arrested or something. Whipped them to Paddington Station, where the RTO, Rail Travel Officer, or whatever it was called, was waiting for them with a rail warrant, which took them to Bath, where I'd been taken. They arrived at Bath to be told that I'd been moved to Gloucester City General. They put them up that night. In the morning, a taxi was waiting for them. Petrol rationing was waiting for them, and it took them all the way to Gloucester, where they found me. The people of Gloucester, I'm always indebted to them. They looked after Dad for two or three days, but being a working man, he had his living to earn. He had to go back. They kept Mum there for 5 to 6 weeks. She never paid a penny. She wanted to pay, but they wouldn't let her pay. She was with a Gloucester family in Gloucester. And they found out she liked Reed Stout. And where they got it from, I mean, I don't know. But Reed Stout, every night with her meal, she had a bottle of Reed Stout. And she came into the ward, and I'd gone down from 11 stone to just 6.5 stone. Did have severely old wounded. The first I remember of the plastic surgeon, Emily Lewis, marvellous man, Welsh man. There you go. So do you want any more of this hospital story?
Yes, yeah. Oh, yes, I like
you're going
it.
Okay, are we?
Yeah, yeah. So I just keep looking at it just to check the time.
The first I saw of Emily Lewis and his team was standing at the foot of the bed. By then, I suppose
so
I was on drugs.
Go on to him.
Hmm?
What was your mother's reaction?
Mum was very brave. Mm. I mean, considering she had other stepsons and, I know, Wall. Mm. I mean, Wall never worked in his life, and he was reported missing in Burma. But Wall, for want of a better word, was a spiv. That different to his brother, who was Richard, who did well. And I swear, Wall is alive in Burma today, running a brothel somewhere. He was that, you know. But he was reported missing. So I sent her other son.
Didn't let you.
No, but Dad, they came round. I mean, the most embarrassing thing of being in hospital as a wounded soldier in Gloucester was the fuss that people made of you.
Really?
You go out of an evening and you go to the pictures, nothing to pay. You went in and saw the film free. You know, it's kind of embarrassing at times. You came out and you went to the cafe for a cup of tea and a piece of cake or a sandwich or something, nothing to pay. Would not let you spend your money.
Really?
You go back, and on your bed, perhaps the Rotary Club have been, the post office have been, the telephone girls have been, and there'll be about 60 to 100 fags on your bed. Just,
really?
And bearing them, cigarettes were on coupons in them days. So, you know, I mean, they treat, I mean, the Naffy came round while Dad was standing there the first time they came. The Naffy came round, the Naffy trolley, and you got, you didn't have to pay for them either. That was free in the hospital for us. And he came round, and it was cigarettes, and he said, oh, he said, you won't want your cigarettes, will you? You're too ill. I said, yes, I will. I'll give them to him. And that broke Dad. That broke Dad. He cried. This big, he was 6 foot six, Dad. Big as a barn, ex-merchant seaman. He'd crush an apple in his hand. He was actually strong. He creased him. And shut up, he said to me, shut up. And he cried. He moved out and he cried.
Yeah. And he must have looked a terrible sight.
I banished it, something that's banished. Yeah, banished out in this little hole. Yeah. And they wouldn't let me smoke. I loved the fag. But because of the hole in my mouth, the smoke came out. And then the other patients had told he's not to smoke. Because he'd get nicotine on the bandage. They knew I'd be smoking, you see. You know, I mean, all this sort of thing. And then they, you know, I mean, it was silly to smoke anyway, because it would have. Anyway, surgeon, plastic surgeon came round and he stood at the end of the bed and he said, what is that goddamn awful smell? And suddenly he said, well, his battle blouse, he's got eggs or something in his battle blouse. And they hadn't taken it off.
He's still wearing the same clothes.
Because the fractured skull left front of the moon.
Oh, right, 10 days later.
He said, get it off him and get him cleaned. And he says, because I was dopey, I remember this, you know, before Mum and Dad arrived, this was. I remember sort of looking at that. What's going on here, you know, where am I sort of thing this time. And he said, what's that smell? And somebody said eggs. I said, you know, I said, where there's chickens there's eggs. And he always called me eggs after that. Where is old eggs, yeah. You know, and it stuck in his mind, where there's chickens there's eggs.
So when the surgeon came round to see you first, did he tell you, had you seen your injuries?
Nobody had actually told. I think I was too dopey. You know, with drugs and whatever, they dumped me up to that. He then, going back to the nasty bits, within a couple of days, I was sort of coming off the drugs and I'd had an operation. I think they'd sealed that hole off a bit. And the mouth, inside the mouth, healed it on its own. But this bit at the top, they sort of put a piece of skin right off there. It comes off the arm there, sort of see the mark. A bit there. And the bone that's there came from my hip. And I'm not taking my trousers off to show you. It comes there.
Yeah. And, oh, I see. So they built all that up. So this was
see the flat
advanced.
There?
Yes.
See the flat? They fold that flat down.
Oh, I see, yes.
And took that across. Mm. The big jobs, if you're interested, aren't you? The big jobs in the end days, they raid what they call a pedicle on your stomach. Mm. They didn't do this for me. All my plastic surgery came from there. Where they rolled a forehead flat down and took it across, and then skin from there, and then they have to build that up. And you see the path of the, if you look, path of the strap and went. And it missed the facial nerve. They said, I was like, oh, Lord, what they do, they put a pedicle there, and they leave it for a period of 6 weeks, I think it was, and they cut that end and take that up to there. And leave that for 6 weeks till it grows and takes, and then cut that end and take it up to there, and then cut off what they want. And so you're going to have a new nose. And that's how they did it, replaced a pedicle. They might do it differently today.
Yeah.
And But going back to the nasty bit, the nurse was doing the dressing there one day and she did something and hurt me. And I had my fist up. And I think with other incidents, that she said, "You are a nasty piece of work." And I thought, oh, I'm not. I'm a nice guy. I love the fun, like I am now. And it bothered me. Now, when I went home on the first leave, you were sent home in between operations, virtually. And something happened. The mother said, "What happened to my son? He's not come home from the war." She said, "I don't know what's happened to my son, but you're not him." And I went to my room and consciously thought, "You've got to change, mate." And from that moment, bit by bit, but all those years later, 4 years ago, when the wife died, I was in Waterloo Ville, and a chap in a wheelchair came along. I, being blind that side, I didn't see him, and he crashed into me. And if he hadn't said anything, it would have been all right. And he said, "Can't you see I'm so-and-so disabled?" And I whipped my glasses off. I said, "What do you think that is?" And David was there. He got on my hand. "Dad, I've got to hit him." And in Asda's, when the wife died, it came back. A chap, I think he thought he should be first in the queue to the checkout. And I, innocently, went on and pushed me little bits in there, and he ran it into the back of my leg. I picked this trolley up. I can't lift the trolley empty, full of shopping, and throw it right down the gangway. "You, what should, mate, you're next." No David with me that day. He moved off quick. And the girl said to me on the checkout, she said, "You all right, sir?" I said, "I'm sorry about that." She said, don't worry. She said, "I'm sorry about that," I said. "I thought they were going to call the police. I mean, you see this shop, and the eggs all over the shop." So it's still there. This really nasty, you know.
Well, it's hurt, really, isn't it?
You've got it, hurt. Yeah. You know, with Babsy going and things like that. And then I came home from that little episode. I thought, "Hey, you've got to stop this, mate. You'll end up in prison." You know. Mm. But going back to the hospital, I never, ever will say, I can't say more than thank you to the people of Gloucester or Gloucestershire. Mm. You know, really, for the way they looked at and that badge. I mean, we got free stuff, pictures, anything. But as soon as that badge was seen, that Gloucester badge, they're proud of their regiment. And the people of Gloucester, anywhere in Gloucester you wear that badge. I think even today, you know, you're a hero. Mm. You are. They thought the world of you. Mm. And so, bit by bit, I came back to being normal.
Right. So you had to keep having operations. How many did you have?
24. In the 4 years. All in Gloucester, City General. I'm sorry that place has gone down. No, we were in huts. Mm. And the
there was a space behind it, wasn't there?
Yeah, that's right. We were in the huts. There's the main hospital.
I know it well, and then we used it as a car park.
That's right. And then at the back, there was huts. And in one hut was the recreational hut with table tennis, billiards. Mm. And each Christmas time, we put on a panto. One for the children, because there's children's hospitals in there, and the kids from the schools. And one for the staff of an evening. Totally different one. Same panto, totally different words. And I can still see myself going round there as a chicken. "Hey, little hen." You know, going round and being a chicken. Yeah. And bearing in mind, one leg chicken, one arm chickens, one eye chickens. And they would do things like that. Yeah. And you've heard of Wally Hammond, the great Gloucestershire cricketer. They, for charity, put on the cricket team, the Gloucestershire County cricket team, to play us. What's the name of the ground there? The county ground, anyway. And we went to play them cricket. In the county ground at Gloucester.
Oh, right.
Wally Hammond was playing Tom Goddard, the England left-arm spinner. What they had to do, there was more than 11 aside, including them. Your name, my name, went into a hat. No right eye. Another chap to go in, no left hand, no right leg, you see. And the cricketer drew my name out, had to black out one eye.
Oh,
right. And Tom Goddard, left hand England spin bowler, drew somebody without a left hand. It had to happen, didn't it? But what a wonderful time we had. And they raised money for the hospital in doing that.
Lovely.
So that was so that's basically from training right through to being wounded.
Lovely. Frank, Rosier, end of reel 6.
Mm-hmm.